Welcome, everyone. As she said, I'm Dr. Johnson, and I also practice as a child abuse nurse practitioner and as a forensic nurse. I'm practicing at Children's Health Care of Atlanta as a child abuse nurse practitioner. I want to emphasize that I did not conduct this study. I am presenting on behalf of Dr. Speck, but we do believe that it is important for us to talk about part one because me and Julie conducted part two of the study, so we want to give you a little background so you can have an understanding of both studies. First, we want to talk about the definitions, and since it's a part one and a part two, you can apply the definitions to part one and part two. So sexual penetration for the study refers to anal, genital, or the oral structures without consent of the adolescent. The penetration with penis without consent is penetration into the oral, anal, and introital areas. And penetration with oral structures is the oral, anal, and introital areas. And then lastly, what we call digital penetration, which is penetration with digits or objects into the anal or introital areas. We felt that it was important to focus on the characteristics of adolescent sexual assault because it causes so many consequences. Within the intrafamilial sexual violence against children and adolescents includes pregnancy, addiction, and depression, just to name a few. Most of the children and adolescent victims have vulnerabilities that the assailants use to victimize the children. The factors that we focused on in the study were the race of the adolescent, whether or not the adolescent was abducted, whether or not the perpetrator used a weapon, whether or not the perpetrator was known or a stranger to the adolescent, whether or not the perpetrator used force, whether or not there were any physical injuries that the adolescent sustained during the assault, whether or not the adolescent had any developmental disabilities, if intercourse occurred, and then if it was vaginal or any other type of intercourse. We just specified vaginal or other. And also, if there was a history of the adolescent being sexually assaulted. The study that we're talking about right now, I say adolescents, but this study focused on adolescents and adults. The subsequent study only focused on adolescents. This study was conducted at a sexual assault center in Memphis, Tennessee. And this study combined, it is a replication study as well. So it looked at patients between 1992 and 93 at the sexual assault center, and then it looked at patients in 2001 at the same sexual assault center. The sexual assault center was the Memphis Sexual Assault Resource Center. And the study that I referred to, 1992 to 93, those are the 1995 study results. And it looked at the differences between adolescent and adult victims and whether or not there was a delay in the adolescents reporting the victimization and whether or not the assailant was known to the victim. So you can see that the study in 2001 examined 1,137 patients, and then the study in 1992, it studied 1,733 patients. I know this is a lot to look at, so I'm just going to point out the most important things that we noticed from this study. And as you can see, the average age of the youth decreased over time. So the average age was initially 15.2, and that decreased to 14.8 in adolescents. And then the history of being sexually assaulted increased in both the adolescents and the adults. This is just some key study results. It looked like African Americans were overrepresented in both studies. And the main thing is the weapon use over time in adolescents and adults did start to show some trends. And those things were that the reporting of force decreased significantly in the adolescent group especially, and that the adolescents had less injury over time. And then also that alcohol and drug use promotes vulnerability. So that was something that we decided we should look at as well. And then the last one is if you see the adolescent history of being previously assaulted increased. The thing that we noticed as far as the perpetrators or the offenders is that they began to plan their assaults. It became less based on impulse, and our data showed that they started planning and what we would call, that we'll talk about in part two, grooming the adolescents. And when we say grooming, it's like the use of tools. So they began to notice that we saw in adolescents that they received gifts, that they received alcohol, just things to kind of take away the using of force and start giving them other things, which might also account for why the injury is decreased as well. This study was a qualitative and quantitative study. So they identified themes associated with adolescent sexual assault, and then using the themes identified in the aim number one, analyze those common themes in adolescent rape. And I keep going back and forth between rape and sexual assault, but they are interchangeable. And Dr. Speck, she's specifying, so in the first study, it was mainly, when we did our literature review, it was mainly a library search. It wasn't electronic. We laughed because I guess it's showing her age. But the second study was electronic with the help of the librarian. And then she also is working on publishing her concept map, which is also included in this presentation. And this concept map is really important. I don't know if everybody can read it, but I will just highlight some important things that we looked at: the offender characteristics, so age, gender, whether or not they have any mental health concerns, whether or not they have any addictions, their relationship to the victim, and then some victim characteristics that look at the age, gender, whether or not they were sexually assaulted previously, their relationship to the offender, and any mental health concerns that they might have. And then the type of sexual assault that occurred, whether or not there was any penetration or was it fondling. And lastly, the whole purpose of this is because we want to decrease the consequences that the adolescents have that subsequently adults will have. So we look at the short-term sequela. So you have the victim resistance to reporting any physical injury, any psychological injury, and social and spiritual disruption. And then the long-term sequelae is like a decline in mental and physical health, a decrease in school performance, lifetime earnings. You know, some of them don't finish school, some of them don't even finish high school. And their intimacy issues, you know, can follow them for the rest of their life, and increase in teen pregnancy. So the main thing that we come out from these studies that we want to, you know, emphasize is that there is a need for primary prevention, specifically increased supervision of the adolescents. You know, you can't control them all the time, but what we have noticed is there is a lot of opportunities where the adolescent should have been supervised more. And then you have the vulnerabilities that affect whether or not they can be supervised, which include chaotic families, which include impoverished families, a lack of education. single mother households, specifically with mom's boyfriends. And that's a huge one that we see, and also a history of previous sexual assault, because with them being previously sexually assaulted, it affects them, which makes them more vulnerable in the future. You know, it affects their self-esteem. And so this is one of the things that we can do is help change policy and strengthen laws supporting adolescents reporting rapes. You know, countrywide from the 1980s, the states defined age of consent and legal relationships with sexual partners, eliminating consent defense in adolescent rape. And then we need to do some system changes and more education. A lot of adolescents feel that they will be blamed for being sexually assaulted. A lot of adolescents are blamed for having sex with mom's boyfriend or mom or stepdad, which is a huge concern. And then the social belief changes in law enforcement, media, and legislation. You know, I encounter a lot where law enforcement is like, well, did she want it? And you're sitting there and you're like, well, she's 14. So, you know, that's a huge concern that needs to be addressed. And this is saying, the next presentation is going to use the data from these two studies, and then it will address anything that I did not answer here. We tried not to state the same thing over. Okay, thank you.